Thank you for joining me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are going to pick up our story that we left off with last session, which is the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. This took place at the very beginning of the 3rd year of Jesus' ministry. That is the spring of 32, sometime in April, more than likely, before Passover. And Jesus had been trying to take his 12 apostles away to a remote area to be alone, kind of recover from the time they'd spent in their 2x2 ministry over the last several months. And he didn't escape the crowds because they jumped on a boat, probably over by Bethsaida, Galilee, and Capernaum, which are two cities very close to each other on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. So he jumped on a boat there with his apostles and took off to the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee, where there's a rural area over there in the flatland. It's actually the delta buildup area from the upper Jordan River. But this is a remote, probably agricultural area at this time, that was southeast of Bethsaida, Julia, which is actually in another country. It's in the country of Galenitas, which we know today as the Golan. The crowds that Jesus had been ministering to over on the north shore immediately figured out which boat Jesus was in, and that he was heading toward the east shore. And so they ran along the Jordan, along the Roman road, along the north shore, over to Bethsaida Julius, and then cut across into the same area that Jesus was going to land at. So when Jesus arrived, he was greeted by these huge crowds again. And his compassion went out to them, and he began to minister to them. And you remember that as the sun was going down, the apostles came to Jesus and said, "Please, you've got to send these people away. It's getting really late. There's nothing around here where we're at that's going to sustain them overnight. They need to be able to go to the surrounding towns and villages, maybe some of the farms, so that they can get some food and have a place to stay for the night." And Jesus' response was basically, "No, you take care of them." And they were taken aback by this, apparently. And Jesus turned to Philip and said, "Well, Philip, where would you get food to feed these people?" And his response was, "Even if we had 200 days' wages worth of food, it would only put a little tiny bit in each of their mouths. That's not enough." And then Jesus says, "Well, why don't you find out what we have here? What's available?" And so they scattered around into this crowd, and eventually we have Andrew come back and say, "There's a little boy here, and he's got 5 barley loaves and a couple of fish, a couple of dried fish." Think about it as a meal for one person, a hungry teenage boy, if you will. So 5 slices of bread and a couple of smaller, flat, dried-out fish. That's it. And Andrew even said, "Well, how's that going to help us with this many people?" Now, how many people are there? Well, this is where we can now take up our story again in the 4 Gospels, because all 4 Gospels tell this story. It must be pretty important then. In Luke chapter 9, verse number 14, it says, "For there were about 5,000 men." Now notice, that's 5,000 males, 5,000 men. There are going to be women there with them, and there are going to be children there with them. And so there are upwards of 10 to 15,000 people in this crowd up in this remote area on the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. Now, Jesus has a plan in mind. And so here is what his instructions are to his disciples. He said to his disciples, have them sit down in groups about 50 each. Now, in the Matthew account, Matthew 14, 19, and we actually need to bounce around quite a bit and compare things here because there's just so much detail that comes from all the four Gospels. So Matthew 14, 19, then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. So we know that there's grass here, and we know a little bit more about that grass, that it is it's green grass because the Passover time is very close because of the spring time. John makes note of this as well. John 6, verse number 10. Jesus said, have the people sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, because it is rural. And so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. And then one more, Mark chapter 6, verse number 39. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And this is going to allow the apostles to be organized in their role as waiters, because that's what they're going to be doing. As we go through this, I want you to think about the logistics involved in this sort of situation. And so now, since we're in Mark, let's see what Jesus does next. Verse 41 of Mark 6. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And then he divided the two fish among them all. So Jesus has all of these people sitting in groups of 50 up to 100, just depending on their particular organization. Maybe some of the groups know each other well enough that they want to sit in groups of 100. And once they're down, he takes these five barley loaves and starts ripping them up after having thanked God for his provision. And then he starts doing it with the fish as well. And he's putting it into baskets, which the apostles are using to distribute. So you have to picture them. Jesus is ripping, and throwing it on baskets. And the apostles are taking that off to a group. And the people are getting, you know, little pieces of bread with some fish and making themselves a little taco wrap, if you will. And then the apostles, after they've distributed what was ever in their basket, they take off to go back to Jesus again. And he's still sitting there, ripping. And it doesn't stop. It never ends where he doesn't have bread and fish there in front of him, in his hands. And so this goes on probably for a couple of hours, that Jesus is like the chef in a very busy kitchen, and the 12 apostles are like the wait staff in a very busy restaurant. And it continues until, verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied. And so it means that not a single one of them was still genuinely hungry. And once they had finished, You know, the apostles are probably still going around to some of the groups saying, "Are anybody still want something?" And no, no, thank you. That was more than enough. Appreciate it. So once they get to the point that the crowd is satisfied, Mark tells us, and remember, Mark is telling us what Peter preached. That's the tradition from very early on in church history, is that Mark recorded all of Peter's preaching about the things that Jesus did and said. So Peter was right there, and this is how Mark said. It says, verse 43, they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. So in the Matthew account, this is Matthew 14, 21. Those who ate were about 5,000 men besides women and children. So between all of those accounts, we know that Jesus was able to feed perhaps 15,000 plus people from one young man's dinner. That is a huge miracle. And it would have taken a good long time for all of this to occur. And this, no doubt, starts getting the people to think about what's happened here. Now let me go to John chapter 6, which is going to let us know what happens next. And for this, I want to start back again with them being full. So this is John 6, 12. When they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. So that's where they gathered the leftovers, and that's when the crowd starts processing what just happened. Verse 14, when the people saw the sign that he had done, that is this miracle of feeding 15,000 plus people from hardly anything, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." Now, the prophet is a reference to Deuteronomy chapter number 18, where Moses passed on to the people something that was passed on to him by God, that there would be a future prophet that would arise in Israel, like unto himself, and that his word would bring life or judgment. Now, some of the Jewish people in this time period that we're looking at seem to have thought that the prophet was someone separate from the Messiah and separate from Elijah, the forerunner of the Messiah. But others believed that the prophet was synonymous with the Messiah. And of course, those of us who are modern-day Christians, we understand that to be the case, that Jesus was the fulfillment of the Deuteronomy 18 passage about the prophet. So this crew seems to be of the opinion that the prophet and the Messiah are one and the same, and they are overwhelmed with excitement about this revelation of Jesus' power as the prophet, as the Messiah. And they have in mind that since Passover is coming up, and soon all of the Galileans are going to be heading south to Jerusalem for the Passover, that they're going to take Jesus with them in this great triumphal pilgrim parade to allow him to then declare himself at Jerusalem at Passover as the Messiah, which was fully in line with what many of these Messianic Jews were expecting. They believed that when the Messiah came along, he would declare himself at Jerusalem, probably at the temple itself, during some major gathering of the people, which always happened at Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. When Jesus figured out that the crowd was thinking about doing this, he reacts in this fashion. John 6:15. Perceiving that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. Now, where they're at, here on the northeast corner, as I said, it's kind of a flat area where the delta has kind of built up from the inflow of the Jordan. There's kind of a ring of higher hills, which is referred to as mountains here, that surround this flat area on the east, northeast, and north side of this area. My guess is that Jesus immediately went up to the hill to the east, or perhaps even to the southeast of this flat area, to get away from the crowd. Now, he checked in with his apostles first, and that is mentioned in both Matthew and Mark. Let's read that. Matthew 14:22. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain to pray by himself. And when evening came, he was there alone. Mark tells it this way, Mark 6:45. Immediately, he made his disciples get up into the boat and go before him to the other side to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. Now, this is part of the evidence that Bethsaida is the name of two distinct places near the northern end of the Sea of Galilee. One of them is the one where the feeding the 5,000 took place near, and that's Bethsaida Julius, or Julia, on the northeast corner. And that's in Galenitas, or the Golan, that's governed by Tetrarch Philip. And then the other is Bethsaida Galilee, which is in Galilee and governed over by Tetrarch Herod Antipas. They're half-brothers. That Bethsaida is the one that's being referenced here. It's near Capernaum, and it's closer to the northwest corner of the Sea of Galilee. And so the goal here is he wants his apostles to get in the boat and go back to the place that they came from earlier that very day. And then Mark tells us that after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. So Jesus' intention was for the 12 apostles to leave by boat and not wait for him. But they wait for him. And they wait for him for quite some time. We know this from John chapter 6, verse 16. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into the boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. So apparently the apostles were convinced in their own heart, we need to kind of hang around, not leave Jesus alone up on that mountainside. We'll just wait until he's finished and comes back down. So they, in effect, disobeyed his instructions. They waited until it was fully dark before they started across the sea, which may have contributed to them being on the sea still when this windstorm began. Verse 18 of John 6. the sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. Now, don't mix this one up with the earlier storm where the apostles thought that they were all going to drown, and Jesus stood up and calmed the sea that was exceptionally rough and threatened to swamp the boat. This is just a super strong headwind that they are running into. Verse 19 says, when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, it's here 25 to 30 stadia. Stadia is 607 feet. So they're somewhere between 2 and 3 miles on the path from where the feeding of the 5,000 took place toward Bethsaida, Galilee. So they're only about 2/3 of the distance that they're wanting to go that night. And they're not making any more progress. And what happens is Jesus sees from a distance what's going on. Let's go to Matthew now. Matthew 14, 24. 14:24. Actually, 23 says, when evening came, he was there alone, but the boat by this time was a long way from the land. So we know 2 to 3 miles or 3 to 4 miles. And it was being beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And so now Jesus is able to see from a distance that they are not getting any farther. They're kind of stalled out about 2/3 of the way to their destination. If he's up on the hill, it is easy on a clear night to see ships down on the sea, especially at this time of night. It's the fourth watch of night, which is between 3 a.m. and 6 o'clock, sunrise. And that tells you again about how long they delayed, because they must not have started out until after midnight in order to have run into this headlong wind, and it's taking them more than 3 hours, probably, to be in the sea when they should have been able to even row that 6 or 7 miles in just a few hours. Verse 25, in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And so Jesus surprises them by coming to them on the sea. In the Mark account, it gives a little bit more detail. Verse 48 of chapter 6. He saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them, and about the fourth watch of the night, again between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass them by. So it looked as if he was just walking by on the waves, and they see him, and they become very frightened. Verse 49, when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out. The word for ghost here is the idea of a phantom, a phantasma. It's a spirit. It wasn't that they thought he was a dead person's spirit, but rather kind of like a spirit of the water. A little bit of a superstition thing going on here with them. For they all saw him, and they were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, or more specifically, I am. Don't be afraid. So Jesus tries to calm them down, and then we have this very famous thing that happens next. And this is in Matthew's account. It's interesting. It's not in Mark's, because that's Peter's recollections, and he apparently avoids telling this part of the story. So this is what we'll finish with today. Matthew 14, let's go back to 27. Immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Now, you got to love Peter here. He is showing faith. He's plucking up his courage here, because he would have been scared just like everybody else, seeing this humanoid figure walking on the water during this windstorm. But when the figure speaks and it sounds like Jesus and he says, "Don't be afraid," Peter says, "If it really is you, you tell me to come out there to you." And so, verse 29, he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. Now, never, ever forget that. We do remember that Peter begins to sink in a moment, but never forget that he actually did walk on the water for a bit. Verse 30, when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me!" So the thing that got him in trouble is he took his eyes off Jesus. I've heard sermons about this, and I think they're great. He took his eyes off Jesus, and he began to doubt Jesus' command in his life to come to him. And so he began to sink and cries out, "Lord, save me!" And so Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, they together walked into the boat, the wind ceased. And this is where we'll have to drop off today. We'll come back and tell the rest of this miraculous story the next time we're into God's Word.